The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So this week, we're in the in the midst of a householder retreat, which is a period of intensive practice for householders, meaning that we are working towards bringing our mindfulness practice throughout our day. And we support that by meeting mornings and evenings every day this week. We met on Sunday afternoon, and we'll also meet the full day Saturday. So it's kind of like bracketing our work day and our work week with support of the Dharma. And one of the themes that we're working with this week is recognizing emotions, bringing our mindfulness, our awareness to our emotional life throughout our day. Just seeing what the ebb and flow, what happens to us emotionally throughout our day. So this evening I thought I would talk a little bit more about working with emotions, both on and off the cushion. It has a relevance, working with emotions, particularly what we might call the afflictive emotions, the difficult emotions, is relevant to us in our meditation practice in that at times it gets difficult to bring our attention to something like our breath, to stabilize our attention on a simple object like our breathing, because we're in an emotional storm. So learning how to bring our mindful attention to the emotion itself is a helpful way to keep us engaged in the mindfulness practice while we're going through some difficult emotions. And in our householder practice, it's a key for being able to stay connected with our mindfulness throughout our day, to kind of be able to track our emotional experience, to just be able to gently recognize what kind of emotions are going through. So on the cushion, we can get a little more detailed, investigative. It's a little bit easier to take the time if we're going through a storm of emotion on the cushion to really take the time and investigate and explore what actually is going on. In our daily life practice, we tend to hold it much more at a light level and just kind of begin to recognize what our emotions are and how we're going through our day. So I'm going to talk about both parts this evening, but focus somewhat too on what we can observe of these emotions in our sitting practice. Often we think when we come upon these difficult emotions, states like anger, greed, frustration, hostility, resentment, fear, loathing. When we come up with those kind of states, when those things happen to us, we have this idea that we somehow need to get past them or get rid of them in order for the mindfulness practice, the meditation practice to deepen. But somehow we feel like they're blocking us, that it's in our way, these states of mind. But actually, the moving forward of the practice, the doorway to the deepening of the practice goes through these emotions. It's not by getting rid of them. It's by fully experiencing them, fully understanding them. And this points to the First Noble Truth. These emotions are generally suffering states when you're experiencing these things. Generally, there's a component of suffering to that. And the Buddha's instruction to us in the First Noble Truth was to understand suffering, The First Noble Truth is there is suffering. This is suffering. Suffering is part of existence. And the instruction that the Buddha gave to us is to understand suffering. That's what we are, how we are to take action with our suffering. And this understanding is not an intellectual understanding, not an idea, not thoughts about why these emotions are here, but actually rather a more felt sense, an understanding of what is it like to be a human being experiencing this emotion. So the doorway, the pathway through these emotions to the deepening of our practice goes through the understanding, the ability to be with these emotions. So from the perspective of mindfulness, we often think or we often feel like there's some particular object that is the right object for meditation. Some particular thing that we can pay attention to, some particular experience that we can have that will, if we can pay attention to that experience, things will unfold, that will become awake, will become enlightened. If I can only stay with my breath for the whole sitting, that's the path. If I can only be in a state of peace and bliss, that's the path. But from the perspective of mindfulness practice, it does not matter what we bring our mindfulness to. The thing that matters is the continuity of the mindfulness, the ability to stay in touch with our experience, no matter what it is, to just stay in contact with it. That staying in contact with experience helps to reveal what we could call the characteristics of all experience. All experience has some basic characteristics in common. And that's essentially what we're trying to come to with our mindfulness practice, is to really see the truth of all existence, to see what is true about our experience. And what is true about all of our experience is that it's impermanent. It's not satisfactory as a lasting source of happiness. And it doesn't have an inherent existence. It doesn't have a thingness to it. It's a product of causes and conditions, and it's continually in flux. It's related to the impermanence. But it's this notion that it doesn't really have an identity, a thingness to it. And there's nothing actually to hold on to about it. So it doesn't matter what we're paying attention to, because everything in our experience has these three characteristics. So the work with mindfulness practice is to be able to stay with our experience so that we can begin to see these qualities in our experience, no matter what that is. It can be a state of anger, a state of self-hatred. And we can see the impermanent, unsatisfactory, and empty nature of that experience. But emotions can be difficult. You know, when we hit emotions, when we hit strong emotions, it can be hard to stay with them. The mindfulness can get swept away because we have such a habit of following our emotional pathways. They're deeply ingrained in our minds. Kind of like ruts. We get in these ruts in our mind, and you know, we get anywhere near this rut and the ball falls in and it's dropped in the bottom of that rut, and it's like really hard to get that ball out of that rut. So these emotions kind of have, some of the strong emotions that we have that flavor. So it's helpful to learn some techniques or some tools to work with emotions. And that's some of what I'd like to talk about this evening, ways to work with emotions. In the suttas, in the words that the Buddha spoke, the teachings of the Buddha, the actual teachings of the Buddha that were recorded 2,500 years ago, there's one story that I like to tell when I'm talking about emotions. And the Buddha was speaking with a gathering of his disciples, and he said, "So, a person who is awake, a fully awakened person, experiences pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral experience. And a person who is not awake, a regular person of the world who is not awakened, also experiences pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. So what's the difference between these two?" And he went on to say, to answer his own question, because typically these were rhetorical questions, so he answered his own question and said, "When a person of the world who is not awakened experiences, in the case I'm going to talk about right now, experiences unpleasant experience, he or she beats their breast, moans and wails, and says, you know, 'Woe is me, why me?' He said it's as if this person experiencing this unpleasant sensation has been struck by a dart and then takes another dart and strikes themselves, because they have added this second round of unpleasant experience to the first. The reactivity, essentially this reactivity to that unpleasant experience is like sticking yourself with a second dart." And he said, "When an awakened person experiences pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, he or she experiences pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral." So essentially, for an awakened person, it stops there. There's no reactivity to the fact that a pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral experience has happened. So life gives us or brings us a certain amount of unpleasant experience. And this can include the ending of pleasant experience. When pleasant experience ends, there's often a sense of loss or grief or something being wrong. Or there's the fear of losing the pleasant experience, somehow bound up in the pleasant experience. So there's a kind of a relationship of the pleasant, holding on to that pleasant, and that there being an ultimately unpleasant experience to follow. And what we typically do with this unpleasant experience is to react. So for instance, if you cut yourself with a knife, there's the physical pain because you've cut yourself. You know, there's the actual physical bodily pain. And this is what the body is designed to do. You know, it's designed to experience pain when it is injured. It's actually a helpful thing for us that it experiences pain like this. I recently learned that the reason for the degradation of the body in Hansen's disease or leprosy is because there's a loss of the pain sensation in the body. So pain serves a very useful purpose for us. It's got a function. And then on top of that pain, we add some thoughts, these arrows. We start hitting ourselves with thought, starts. You know, we start bemoaning and berating ourselves for being so stupid as to not see where the knife was going to go when it slipped. And we sometimes don't stop there. You know, we're self-critical, and then we notice that we're being self-critical, and we get frustrated with ourselves for being self-critical. And then we get angry with ourselves for being frustrated with ourselves, and then we hate ourselves for being angry with ourselves. And it just like piles layer on top of layer on top of layer. Fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, 125th dart, we keep piling on top of this unpleasant experience. So this reactivity to our unpleasant experience is like, it's the beginning of the emotional creation. You know, that typically with our afflictive emotions, there's something going on in our experience, something pleasant that we really want to hold on to and are trying to figure out how to keep, or something unpleasant that we're trying to figure out how to get rid of, or something that we're trying to figure out how to control or manipulate. We get angry when we can't fix things. We get frustrated when we can't keep something that we want. This is the birth of our emotions. This movement from pleasant to the reactivity, from unpleasant to the reactivity. So it's really interesting and helpful to, in paying attention to emotions, and in paying attention particularly in our daily life, to kind of keep track throughout the day of what's pleasant and what's unpleasant. Because that pleasant and unpleasant is the springboard from which we leap out into suffering. So if you can kind of just keep track of that pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, you can begin to see that when you're mindful of the pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, it has a chance actually to just stay at pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, like the awakened being. If you're awake for pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, it's possible to just have it stop there. The pleasant experience, an unpleasant experience, and not go into the reactivity. It's a huge gift when we see that possibility. So tracking throughout your day, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral experience can be immensely helpful in seeing how emotions are created, and also in beginning to kind of put the brakes on the reactivity. Because if we can be mindful for the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, the reactivity has a chance to not be created, actually. So this cycle of reactivity, you know, as I mentioned, it's not simply that we simply react to physical unpleasant experience. We also react to mental unpleasant experience, like in the example I was giving of the piling on top of frustration to anger to hatred. It's a reactivity essentially to the negative experience or the unpleasant quality of each of those emotions. So the reactivity piles on top of itself. And we can also have a sense of whether certain emotions are acceptable or not, and that can add a reactivity to our experience. So for instance, there seems to be this idea, as a person who practices mindfulness meditation or as a person who's in Buddhist practice, that we're not supposed to be angry. And if we experience anger, that's a bad thing. So there's a judgment that comes on top of the experience. And that's another layer of reactivity. So we will react to our emotions. And, you know, it's helpful if we can see how they're created and see how they're layered on top of each other. But at the same time, the instruction in mindfulness practice is always to simply pay attention to what is actually happening right here and right now. And if that is self-hatred, which has been piled on top of eight other things, the self-hatred is what we try to bring our attention to. We don't actually need to try to find all the different arrows that have been piled on top of each other. I had a real clear seeing of that on one retreat. Self-hatred is an experience that I have quite a lot of experience exploring. And at one point on one long retreat, I was spending a lot of time paying attention to this self-hatred. And at one point, there was just this sense of seeing just how layered it was, just seeing how deep it went and how much it went back to childhood and reactivity to, you know, various experiences from my childhood. And I felt like, I need to be fully enlightened in order to see through this. You know, there's just no way. It's so deep. There's so many layers. But, you know, even seeing that, it's just like, okay, well, self-hatred is at the top of the stack. That's what I pay attention to. So paying attention to whatever's on the outside of the, you know, whatever's the most obvious, whatever's the most clear, the most recent experience, that's what we touch. And actually, to my surprise, on that retreat, as I was able to really just stay with that self-hatred, I saw actually in an instant that it was dismantled in an instant. That just being able to stay with the self-hatred, I could see clearly that it is created in a moment and dismantled in a moment. It's an impermanent thing. It's coming and going and has no actual existence. I just recognized, oh my gosh, this doesn't really exist. And in that seeing were the seeds of freedom. So that experience is really why I say with confidence, it doesn't matter what we're paying attention to. You can be paying attention to self-hatred and deeply see the impermanence of it and get a very clear understanding of how our minds function and a clear sight towards freedom from suffering in that very momentary experience. It doesn't matter what we're paying attention to. If you can allow yourself to hold self-hatred or anger or hostility or rage or regret or loneliness or despair, if you can allow yourself to be with it and hold it, the seeds of freedom are right in that seeing, in that holding. So just what's on the outside. No need really to dig back and figure out where this came from. So in our mindfulness practice, we try to stay with our emotions so that we allow them to be present. But we don't try to repress them. We don't try to stop them. We allow, if there's a sense of allowing with our emotional experience. But there's not a sense of indulging. So we don't try to repress them, but nor do we act out on them. It's really a witnessing, kind of a silent witnessing of the experience. So starting to pay attention to emotions. There's three basic components to an emotion. There's the actual mood or the feeling in the mind, which is what we would probably call the anger or the hatred or the loneliness or the regret. There's just a sense of mood in the mind. Like anger tends to have this feeling of, this movement outwards or a movement away, and it's got a feeling of heat to it. You know, the mind is just embroiled in a kind of a heat situation. Joy has a feeling of lightness in the mind. So there's just a kind of a mood or tone to the mind. And then there's the thoughts that accompany the emotion. So there's often a narrative that goes with the emotion. He said, she said, he did, I wanted to do, I should have done, they should have done. There's a story that goes with the emotion. And then there is the physical experience in the body. Emotions, almost all emotions, and I could almost say 100% of emotions, but I'll reserve it, maybe not quite 100%, have some physical manifestation in the body. So there is, in the experience of anger, there is a feeling in the body. And often it's the feeling in the body. It's either usually the thoughts, the story, the narrative, or the feeling in the body that gives us a clue as to what emotion we're experiencing. Some of us experience our emotions primarily through our thoughts, and that's how we know what's going on with us. And some of us experience it more primarily through the body. You know, there's a kind of a feeling in the body. We can look at or attend to any of these three aspects of the emotion in our meditation, in our mindfulness practice. But, you know, in terms of our habitual tendency, you know, when we think about the way that we've been trained to pay attention to emotions, most of us have been have the habit of paying attention to the thoughts. You know, we think that by thinking about the emotion, you know, the emotion is expressing itself as a bunch of thoughts, and we think that somehow by thinking about it, we can resolve the emotion through thinking. So there's often a lot of mental stuff that goes on around emotions. We think we can figure out the emotion, you know, understand where it came from by thinking about it, thinking about the causes, thinking about how we reacted, thinking about how we should have reacted instead. And so there's a lot of that that goes on, and that's what a lot of people think of when they think about paying attention to emotion. What that tends to do is to latch us to the narrative around the emotion. And what it tends to do is to perpetuate the emotion. So if we remain engaged with this narrative, it tends to fuel the emotion. So what is suggested in our meditation practice in terms of paying attention to these strong emotions, is to rather than... the other piece that it typically happens when we're in a strong emotion is that we're often focused on the thing that we are responding to in our environment. So if we're angry, there's all the thoughts in our mind, and there's the thing we're angry with. And the thoughts and the observation tends to be directed towards the thing we're angry with. How can we fix that thing? How can we get rid of that thing? How can we do something with the environment so that this emotion goes away? So that the attention is directed outwards. And this is true for both anger and for desire states, for wanting. When there's something that we want, we're focused outward on the thing that we want. How can we get it? How can we arrange our world so that that thing will be in our control? So in that typical movement of staying with all the thinking and being associated outward, we're not really experiencing what it feels like to be angry or to be in the state of desire. So the instruction in mindfulness practice is to turn around, to let go of the thing that we're angry about or the thing that we're wanting, and to pay attention to what it feels like to be a human being that is in this state. The easiest place to do that and the easiest place to let go of the thinking around or the story, the narrative around the emotion is to come into the bodily experience of the emotion. So coming in to investigate what's going on in the body. With anger, there's typically a lot of stuff going on in this area, in the torso. In the heart, there can be a contraction around the heart, a feeling of heat and pressure in the chest, maybe a feeling of pressure and pushing upward in the throat, even a pressure up in the head. So a lot of feeling of that, just, you know, like you're going to boil over in that anger. So bringing the attention into what does it feel like? What is the actual experience of feeling anger? Now, this can be counterintuitive because often when we come in contact with this experience, it's not pleasant. You know, it's not going to be something that's like, oh, that feels good. Oh, I'll think I'll hang out with this for a while. It's kind of like, whoa, why do I want to be here? What is the point of this? It takes perhaps a little bit of a leap of faith at first to do this. But as we begin to do this, we start to see that it is a way of being with the emotion that allows the emotion to live its life. Emotions are like everything else. They're impermanent. They're like a wave. You know, they're just like this wave that passes through us. And if we are allowing the physical experience to be there without any resistance and without feeding it with our thoughts, the wave will come in and go out. And you'll get to see it kind of pass through. And then you may get to see another wave pass through. But you'll start to experience the impermanent nature of the emotion by allowing this experience. And you'll see that it's actually easier to be with the anger when you're with it in this way, with mindfulness. And you'll begin to see that it is leading you towards freedom, towards the release from that anger or other difficult emotion. So it begins to take the quality that when we're with the feeling in our body, we understand that it is the suffering that leads to the end of suffering. And there can even be a kind of a joy in paying attention in this way to our experience. There can be a kind of a happiness of allowing this truth of this emotion, which is here. It's a truth because it's existing in our body right now. It's a truth of our experience. Allowing the truth to manifest and be experienced and felt and flow through. Now, this doesn't mean acting on it. But it means witnessing. We could call it a witnessing of the experience. So I'd like to talk about four aspects of paying attention to emotion, or four aspects that the mindfulness can bring out in our paying attention to emotions. And there's an acronym that goes with these four aspects to help us remember working with them. And the acronym was created by one of my teachers, Michelle McDonald. The acronym is RAIN, R-A-I-N, and it stands for recognition, acceptance, investigation, and non-identification. So I'll go through each of these kind of quickly. So recognition. This is really just a really simple recognizing the emotion. What is the emotion? What's going on? It can be really helpful to just simply recognize the emotion in a very simple way, just knowing, oh, this is anger. This is frustration. This is greed. This is resentment. Just to recognize it. There's a power to the recognition. That it, in a way, the recognition, it's engaging that aspect of our mind that is the observer or the witness. It's engaging that aspect of our mind that simply sees experience and knows experience. And that part of our mind is, in its very nature, non-judgmental. So as we engage that part of our mind that witnesses, there's a little bit of that non-judgmental quality that comes in the recognition. So it helps us to touch into that non-judgmental quality when we can just witness, and actually using the naming here can be helpful to use a noting like, oh, anger, this is anger. Just recognizing it, simply recognizing it. It can sometimes take a while to actually recognize an emotion. You know, sometimes it's not so clear to us what we're experiencing. And if that's the case for you, don't try to figure it out necessarily. Just hanging out with it as an emotion. You can just, you know, say it, you could label it as, well, I know there's an emotion happening. You might be able to know whether it's a pleasant or an unpleasant emotion. So you could key into that side of it. And just, you know, okay, unpleasant emotion. There's some unpleasant emotion going on. And as you kind of just hang out with that, it may begin to show itself. Or sometimes it can feel like there's so many emotions going on that it's like hard to pin it down. It's like it's not one, it's 15 emotions going on at the same time. It's like this storm of chaotic experience. And I found that one of my favorite notes around this is chaos. Just noticing, wow, chaos is happening. It's a chaotic emotional experience. You don't really need to identify all the different pieces. Just knowing this is a chaotic experience. That's engaging that witness. And it will really, it supports that movement to non-judgmental observation of our experience and supports the movement to non-identification, which is the last of the four aspects. So recognition, the first piece. Acceptance is the second piece. So I hope in some of my earlier discussion it's become clear that it doesn't matter what is happening and that any emotion at all that we're experiencing is okay in mindfulness practice. There's no need to think of any emotions as being good or bad. When we're able to pay attention to them, they're all on the path to our waking up. So acceptance. As much as we can, accepting what's happening. Now sometimes we find that we resist our experience. And if we find we're resisting, we can kind of have this idea that the resistance itself is bad because we're supposed to be accepting. We need to be able to accept resistance as well. So if we're in a state of anger and we see that we're resisting the anger, that's the thing that's on the outside. That resistance is what we pay attention to. So holding at a very gentle level that resistance, just being with that resistance. Any emotion is okay in our mindfulness practice. So recognition, investigation, recognition, acceptance. The third one is investigation. So this is an orienting our mind to the experience and trying to stay connected with our present moment experience. So taking an interest in what the emotion is. How do you know you're experiencing the emotion? And this can hold true. We can also observe, I've been talking mostly about difficult emotions, but we can also observe wholesome emotions, uplifting, happy emotions, joy, tranquility, peace, generosity. All of those can also be brought into our experience. How do we know we're experiencing them? How do we know we're experiencing anger? How do we know we're experiencing joy? A great place to check this out is in the body. Bringing our attention to our physical experience of the emotion. There's so many sensations that happen in the body around emotion. I've mentioned a few of them with anger. You know, you just check in, like with sadness, for instance, there might be a feeling of heaviness. Or with joy, a feeling of lightness. Just what is the physical manifestation of the experience? Now, not in a heavy way. You know, really, it's kind of a sense of just holding the experience. One of my teachers in Burma, Sayadaw Upandita, talks about investigation as being a rubbing of our experience. We like caress our experience and stay in contact with the experience. And there's no need to try to dig or figure anything out. It's more the continuity, the staying in contact. And he would bring a bowl up and take a piece of his robe and rub it. It's like polishing a bowl, staying in contact with the bowl as you're polishing it. Very gentle, just continuous touching of the experience. We can orient our attention to various places in our body. That can be a kind of a additional investigation. We might do a scan of the body, you know, starting at the head and checking out what's the experience of anger in the head and face, or what's the experience of joy as I come down through the torso. Just kind of checking in, with like a massage of the awareness through our body, and seeing, staying in contact with the experience. Like the rubbing, the awareness rubbing through the physical experience. Recognition, acceptance, investigation, non-identification is the fourth piece. So emotions, we tend to pretty strongly identify with particularly our strong emotions, the ones that come up strongly, and the ones that are frequent for us. So we develop an identity around particular emotions. You know, I'm an angry person, or I'm a miserable person, or I'm a happy person. You know, we develop an identity. And when things don't go that way, often we can kind of exclude the knowing of that. It's like a filter. When we think we're an angry person or a miserable person, we tend to exclude the experience of happiness when it comes along. That's one thing that I noticed for myself. I did think of myself as a miserable person. And I began to notice. I mean, even when I was happy, you know, I would think, well, yeah, I'm happy now, but you know, really what I am is a miserable person. And I began to notice with the meditation practice, I began to let in those happy moments and to see that, you know, the miserableness wasn't actually there when the happiness was there. You know, I wasn't a miserable person in that moment. It was the kind of identity or the creation of an identity around the miserable that made it feel like it was a solid thing that was impermeable. And as I began to take in the happy moments and really experience them, it like began to poke holes in this identity of miserable person. So the tools of recognition, acceptance, investigation are all supportive in helping us to begin to lessen the identification with our emotions. Just beginning to take an interest in, you know, with investigation, we can start taking an interest in what it means to be a human being feeling this emotion. And again, in that interest, there's that movement towards the witnessing, towards the knowing of the experience, and that knowing itself just has the quality of non-identification, actually. The knowing itself is not identified with the experience. It simply reflects the experience. It's like a mirror reflecting experience. And when we can key into that knowing of the experience, we can get a sense of that non-judgmental, non-identified quality to our experience. One teacher up at Spirit Rock, James Baraz, talks about a tool, a technique that he uses sometimes to help with this non-identification. That's kind of a fun, playful tool that he uses. And he said he pretends like he's an alien being visiting from another planet. And he's been given an assignment to take up residence in a human body and report back to the mothership what it's like to be a human being. This is what it feels like when they feel anger. This is what it feels like when they feel bliss. Just that being able to witness, and that stepping back, you know, not identified with it. It's like being a scientific observer, an alien coming in, checking out human experience. What's that like? We need to figure this out. Report back on it. So it's very helpful to be able to be with our emotions, to be able to stay in contact with our emotions in that way that I talked about, the rubbing. But it's also really helpful to know when we need to back off, when we need to let go of trying to be with an emotion. Because emotions can be really challenging sometimes. They can be so powerful that we can get swept away. So the rule of thumb that I like to use here is that if I can be mindful of it, stay with it. But if you find that when you try to stay with an emotion, when you try to come in and stay with the emotion, you just get sucked in like it's a black hole, then the best thing to do at that point is to simply recognize, okay, I see that emotion, and I see that also it's not so helpful to try to pay attention to it because it's like a black hole. So turning my attention to something else. Not spacing out, not going to a movie, not fantasizing, not go getting some food to distract ourselves, but turning our attention to something else in our present moment experience that is not the emotion. There's many things going on in our experience. So turning our attention, and probably something neutral is most helpful. So sensation of hands is often a neutral experience. Sensation of feet on the ground, butt on the chair, something grounding, something neutral. Allow yourself to come away from the emotion if it's pulling you into a black hole, and come to something neutral. It's really key to not put this emotion. It's helpful to know how to put these emotions aside. You know, that it's kind of a sense of not now. You know, it's not the appropriate time. As opposed to, I can't deal with this. You know, if we're pushing it aside in that way, we're actually feeding an aversive reaction. So it has to be a real gentle putting aside. And it has to come from wisdom of seeing that it's not so helpful. You know, that there are times when it's not so helpful to bring mindfulness to something if we can't stay with it. So knowing, being really wise about knowing when it's time to put it aside, and putting it aside with compassion, that it's a skillful, helpful thing for us. Bringing our attention to something neutral. So I think I've got much more I can say. But there's 5 minutes left, and I do want to leave a few minutes for some questions, if there's any questions or comments. So
I have a pressing question, because I will experience very strong emotions while I'm trying to sleep, or I'll wake up in the middle of the night. And I will go through the bodily sensations. I will try to experience it for just the emotion, try to leave the story aside, and I will literally spend 2 hours laying in bed trying to use this technique. And I will frequently, after 2 hours, get up and go, okay, that's it. I'm just going to go get some cereal. And there's something about eating that will put my emotions at rest, and then I can go back to sleep and go back to bed and go back to sleep.
Is there a sense of it being an urgent thing that needs to be solved or figured out in that?
It's just that, okay, this just isn't working. I'm just going to get up and do something physical. Get my parasympathetic nervous system going. Put the sympathetic nervous system to sleep.
You know, you might do it a little sooner than 2 hours. Give yourself 10 minutes or so, and if it feels like it's settling, great. And if it doesn't, I mean, it sounds like it doesn't really feel like it's settling. It keeps going. It stays at an agitated level throughout the whole time. Is that right? So it sounds like that the mindfulness isn't actually breaking into the experience. So you could also try. I mean, the reason I asked about that urgent thing is because this idea that I had about this not now and putting it aside came from this came in my experience from an exercise that I read about insomnia. And it was, if you wake up in the middle of the night and your mind is, you know, propelled towards a problem-solving kind of experience, you know, that your mind is kind of hooked on this pattern, that a helpful thing to do is to bargain with yourself and say, okay, now's not the time to pay attention to this, because I need my rest. But I know, I see that you need paying attention to. So at 10 o'clock in the morning tomorrow, when I've got time, we'll think about this. But you have to keep your bargain with yourself. You know, if you don't keep your bargain with yourself, your mind figures out pretty quick you're not going to do that, and it keeps you up all night. But I found that if I do keep my bargain, that I could put it aside. So, you know, you might have something like that going, where you could say, if there's an aspect of it that feels like something that needs to be worked out, you could put it aside, you know, and say, okay, I'll look at this at a particular time tomorrow, you know, or I'll see if I can engage in this emotion at a time tomorrow to look at it. But you could also just allow yourself to say, okay, you know, I see this emotion and I need to put it aside. This is not now. And if going and getting some food helps to do that, that's fine. You know, but you might actually find that you need to do a little bit of the processing, you know, that it might not work to just get up immediately and eat the food, that, you know, there'll be a residual. And you go back to bed, there may still be the residual emotion there. So
now I have another question for you. Sometimes, I mean, I haven't really tried thinking about my hands, but I'll think about, you know, the warmth of the being in bed and resting on the bed and things like that. But the one thing that has sometimes been more helpful for me is thinking about loving kindness. And that has almost, not quite, but almost gotten me off of the mindset or the emotional state.
And that's a kind of a classic tool also to use. One of the teachings the Buddha has on thoughts Because if you've got a kind of a perpetual thought pattern going and you can't, it's distracting and you can't let it go, one of the ways to work with it is to replace it with another thought, a different kind of thought. So metta is another kind of thought, essentially. So that is a pretty classic option as well. Yeah, so that's another good thing to experiment with. But I don't know that I would let it go on for 2 hours. Be a little more gentle with yourself on it. It sounds like there's a little bit of clinging to figuring it out, or clinging to wanting to understand it with the mindfulness. So, you know, you can let go of that piece of it. You know, that's a kind of an agenda that probably actually just keeps it going. Oh, it's 9 o'clock. So, may you all enjoy exploring your emotions. Thank you.